So, what if I told you that the absolute most boring, slow-moving companies on the planet are actually the secret weapon to building, really aggressive weatherproof wealth?
Yeah, it sounds like a contradiction, but it's really not.
Right, because today we are officially putting down the stressful market tickers. We're stepping away from that whole chaotic, adrenaline-fueled world of day trading.
Thank goodness. I mean, that level of constant vigilance is just, it's entirely unsustainable for the average person.
Exactly. It leads to burnout. So if you want your money to work for you without having to check a financial app every like 20 minutes, you are absolutely in the right
It's
place.
just a much healthier way to live, honestly.
It really is.
Yeah.
Today, we're taking a deep dive into the mechanics of dividend investing and passive income strategies.
Which is such a crucial topic right now.
Yeah, and our mission here is to decode the jargon, extract the core metrics you actually need for success, and explore how to build a resilient portfolio for long-term wealth. And we're doing all of this without you needing, a Wall Street finance degree.
Because you really don't need one. Dividend investing shifts your perspective completely. It moves you away from that frantic trading of speculative growth stocks and towards a much more measured, predictable approach.
Okay, let's unpack this because before we start picking out specific tools or opening brokerage accounts, we need a crystal clear understanding of the goal.
Right, you have to know what a dividend actually is first.
Exactly. And for a long time, the classic way to explain this was to say growth investing is like planting an oak tree just to chop it down for timber, but dividend investing is like planting an apple tree.
Where you get to actually eat the apples every year.
Yeah,
I like that.
you get the harvest. But honestly, it feels a bit cliche, right? It doesn't really capture the nuts and bolts of what's happening with your money. I actually prefer to think of it through the lens of like a business partnership.
Oh, absolutely. A business partnership is a much more accurate framework because when you buy a speculative growth stock, your entire return relies on convincing someone else to buy that stock from you later at a higher price.
Right, the greater fool theory almost.
Exactly. But when you buy a dividend-paying stock, you are essentially acting as a silent partner in a functioning business.
Okay, so I'm providing the capital.
Yes, you provide capital, and in exchange, management regularly cuts you a check, representing your proportional share of the actual profits. You are rewarded literally just for holding the shares.
So if I buy shares in, let's say, a local coffee shop franchise, I'm not just hoping the value of the franchise goes up.
Nope, not at all.
If they sell 1 million lattes this quarter and make a massive profit as a part owner, I literally get a cut of that latte money deposited straight into my brokerage account.
Yes, and what's fascinating here is the specific type of company that usually enters into this kind of partnership. You rarely see volatile, brand new tech startups paying dividends.
Right, because they need all their cash.
Exactly. You have to reinvest every single penny back into research, development, and aggressive expansion just to survive. The companies handing out these profit-sharing checks are typically mature, established market leaders.
We're talking about sectors like consumer staples, healthcare, utilities,
Yeah,
right?
the essentials. They've already captured their market share, so they just don't need to plow 100% of their cash back into growth.
They've already built the coffee shops, so to speak. Now they are just collecting the cash.
Right, and because people still need to buy toothpaste or take their blood pressure medication and keep the lights on, regardless of what the economy is doing.
Yeah, the revenues for these companies hold up incredibly well.
Exactly. It creates this really steady anchor for your portfolio, whether you're investing locally here in Saudi or internationally.
But here is where it gets really interesting. Because the real magic happens when you don't actually spend that dividend check. We need to talk about the snowball effect.
Ah, yes. The compounding mechanism. This is the engine of long-term wealth. Most modern brokerages offer a feature called an automated dividend reinvestment plan.
Okay, so how does that work?
When that cash payout hits your account, the system automatically uses it to buy fractional shares of the exact same underlying stock.
So, to stick with our coffee shop, the dividend check comes in, and instead of taking that cash to buy myself an actual latte, the system automatically buys me a slightly larger ownership stake in the coffee shop.
Yes, which fundamentally changes the math for your next payout. Because you now own more shares, your next dividend payment will be slightly larger.
Oh, wow. And then that larger payment is reinvested to buy even more shares.
Exactly, which generates an even larger payment the subsequent quarter. Over a timeline of, say, 10 or 20 years, this compounding creates exponential portfolio growth.
And it does that completely independently of the daily stock price fluctuation.
Yes, that's the beauty of it.
And I feel like the psychological benefit of this cannot be overstated. I mean, when the market inevitably takes a dive, growth investors absolutely panic because their entire net worth is tied to the paper value of their portfolio.
Right, which is suddenly plummeting.
But dividend investors, they are still seeing actual cash hit their accounts every quarter. It completely rewires your brain.
It really does. Instead of panic selling, you start looking at a market crash as, well, a massive discount.
Yeah. Your automatic reinvestment is suddenly buying up more shares at a much cheaper price, locking in even more future income.
It creates an incredible behavioral shield. You stop viewing volatility as a threat and start viewing it as a structural advantage.
Okay, so we know the goal is to partner with stable businesses and reinvest the profits. The next step is knowing how to actually evaluate those businesses.
Right, because you don't just want to pick at random.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because once you log into a brokerage account, you are immediately hit with just a wall of numbers and financial jargon. Let's decode the core metrics here. I'll start with the most obvious one, dividend yield.
Okay, yeah.
The yield. This is basically just the annual dividend payment divided by the current share price. So if a stock costs $100 and pays out $4 a year, your dividend yield is 4%.
Right. It's the quickest way to gauge the income generated relative to the capital you're deploying. A moderate yield, generally in the 3 to 6% range, is widely considered the sweet spot.
Okay, 3 to 6%.
Yeah, for a sustainable portfolio. It provides meaningful income without signaling excessive underlying risk.
Wait, hold on, though. If my goal is passive income and I see a stock offering a massive, like, 15% yield, my instinct is to just grab it. Why shouldn't I just chase the absolute highest yield possible? More money is more money, right?
You would think so, but no. If we connect this to the bigger picture, a yield that looks too good to be true is almost always a trap.
Really? A trap how?
Well, you can't evaluate a dividend yield in a vacuum because of the math you just described. The yield is a fraction of the payout divided by the share price.
Okay, right.
So a massive 15% yield rarely means the company is just being incredibly generous. It usually means the denominator of the share price has recently collapsed.
Ah, so it's like a mathematical illusion. Give me an example of how that actually plays out in the real world.
Sure. Imagine a telecom company trading at $50 a share, paying a healthy $2.50 annual dividend. That's a solid 5% yield.
Sounds great.
Right. But suddenly, news breaks of a massive accounting scandal, or maybe a major competitor steals half their market share. Investors panic and sell, and the stock price crashes from $50 all the way down to $10.
Oh, wow. But the financial websites haven't updated their data yet, right? So it still shows the historical $2.50 payout against the new $10 share price.
Exactly. Which makes the yield suddenly appear to be 25%.
That's crazy.
A beginner logs in, sees a 25% yield, and thinks they found a gold mine. But what they actually found is a company in a financial death spiral.
So what happens next?
Within a few weeks, management will be forced to drastically slash or completely suspend that dividend just to conserve cash. The beginner loses their expected income, and they're holding a stock that's losing value by the day.
Man, that is a terrifying trap. So how do we avoid it? What is the metric that tells us if the dividend is actually safe?
You must look at the payout ratio. This is, hands down, the single most important metric for a dividend investor.
The payout ratio. Okay.
It reveals exactly what percentage of a company's total net earnings is being used to pay the dividend.
Okay, so let me make sure I've got this. If a company makes $1 million in pure profit over a quarter, and they pay out $500,000 in dividends to their shareholders, their payout ratio is 50%.
Correct. And you generally want to see a payout ratio below 60 or 70%, depending on the industry.
Why that specific range?
Because a lower ratio means the dividend is comfortably sustainable. It leaves the company with a massive buffer of retained earnings. If a recession hits or, I don't know, a factory roof collapses and requires emergency capital.
Right. They have the cash on hand to handle the crisis without having to punish their shareholders by cutting the dividend. It also means they have room to actually increase the dividend in the future, which is crucial. I mean, a company paying out 98% of its profits has absolutely zero room for error. One bad month and that dividend is gone.
Exactly. Another layer of security comes from examining the debt.
Right, debt levels.
A company's debt-to-equity ratio tells you how much debt they're using to finance their assets relative to the value of shareholders' equity. If a company is carrying massive amounts of high-interest debt, a huge chunk of their operating cash flow is legally obligated to the bank.
And the bank always gets paid first.
Always. If interest rates rise, servicing that debt becomes even more expensive. High debt severely compromises the safety of your dividend.
Okay, that makes sense. Let's move to a piece of jargon that always trips people up, and it's heavily related to the actual mechanics of how the stock market operates. I'm talking about the ex-dividend.
Oh, yes. This one causes a lot of confusion.
Right, because it is the strict cutoff date to receive the upcoming payout. If you buy the stock on or after this date, you don't get the current dividend. You have to wait for the next cycle. But why does this date even exist? Like, why can't I just buy the stock the day before the payout and collect the cash?
This requires a brief look at the internal plumbing of the stock market. When you click buy on your brokerage app, the trade executes instantly on your screen, but the actual transfer of ownership, the settlement, takes time.
Okay.
Historically, it took several days. Currently, most major markets operate on a T+1 settlement cycle, meaning trade date plus one business day.
So the stock market needs time to update its massive ledger of who actually owns what.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The company declares a record date, which is the day they officially check the ledger to see who gets the checks.
Okay.
Because of the settlement delay, the exchange sets the ex-dividend date, usually one business day before the record date. It guarantees that anyone who buys before the ex-dividend date will have their trade fully settled and be on the official ledger in time for the payout.
Right. And here is the absolute best aha moment of this entire strategy. Let's say a company announces a $1 dividend. On the morning of the ex-dividend date, the stock price will automatically drop by exactly $1.
Yes. This confuses so many new investors, but the logic is completely airtight.
How so?
A company's share price reflects its total value, including the cash sitting in its bank accounts. If a company is worth $100 a share, and it literally hands $1 in cash to its shareholders, the company is fundamentally worth $99 the next morning.
Because the cash has left the building?
Precisely. The cash has left the building.
It perfectly illustrates that dividends aren't just like free money falling from the sky. They are a direct transfer of value from the company's balance sheet to your personal pocket. It's a brilliant mechanism.
It really is.
But as we've established, no mechanism is entirely bulletproof. Even a low payout ratio utility company faces external pressures.
So let's do a reality check and navigate the specific risks involved here. I think that's crucial. Understanding risk is what separates a gambler from an investor.
Exactly.
The most severe internal risk is the dividend cut we touched on earlier. If a company's fundamentals deteriorate, management will prioritize survival over shareholder payouts.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And when a historically stable company announces a dividend cut, it triggers a brutal double whammy.
Yeah.
Your anticipated income immediately drops, and the share price simultaneously craters because all the institutional dividend investors instantly dump the stock.
So even a sturdy, mature company can get hit hard. What about the risks outside of the company's control?
Well, we have to consider macro-level market and sector risks. For example, dividend stocks are constantly competing against treasury bonds.
Okay, treasury bonds.
Treasury bonds are issued by governments and are considered the risk-free baseline of investing. If you hold a U.S. Treasury bond to maturity, you are guaranteed to get your money back plus a specific interest rate.
So what does this all mean for my dividend stocks?
If central banks raise interest rates, those risk-free government bonds start paying higher yields. Suddenly, an investor looks at a utility stock paying a 4% dividend, which carries equity risk, and compares it to a completely risk-free government bond paying 5%.
Oh, I see where this is going.
Right. Institutional money naturally flows out of the dividend stocks and into the bonds, causing the stock prices to drop.
That makes total sense. I mean, you wouldn't take on the risk of the stock market if the government is paying you more for zero risk.
Exactly.
We also need to talk about global investing, because this strategy is entirely borderless. You could be sitting in a cafe in Riyadh, earning dividends from a pharmaceutical giant in London and a consumer staples brand in New York.
Which is great, but it introduces a totally new hazard currency risk.
Right. How does that work?
Whenever you invest outside your home currency, you are implicitly betting on exchange rates. Let's say you are an investor in Saudi Arabia whose currency is pegged to the US dollar, and you buy shares in a British company. The company pays its dividend in British pounds. If the pound significantly weakens against the dollar, the actual purchasing power of that dividend when converted back to Saudi rials will be substantially lower.
Even if the British company never changed its payout.
Exactly. The payout stayed the same, but you get less value.
And speaking of purchasing power, we cannot forget the silent thief inflation. If your portfolio yields a very safe, very reliable 2% per year, but the cost of groceries and housing is rising by 4% per year, your wealth is effectively shrinking.
Yes. This brings us back to the importance of dividend growth. A truly resilient portfolio doesn't just prioritize companies that pay a dividend.
It prioritizes companies with a history of raising it.
Exactly. A decades-long track record of consistently raising that dividend. Your income stream must grow faster than the rate of inflation, or you are slowly going broke safely.
Slowly going broke safely. Wow. Which naturally leads us to the ultimate defense mechanism, diversification. You don't dump your entire life savings into one utility company.
Definitely not.
You spread your capital across different sectors, healthcare, consumer goods, industrials, and across different geographic regions. If European regulations hurt your London energy stock, your U.S. healthcare stocks keep the overall income steady.
Diversification is the only free lunch in finance. But even a perfectly diversified stock portfolio is still fundamentally exposed to the broader volatility of the equity markets.
Right.
If there is a global panic, everything drops.
And here's where it gets really interesting, because you don't have to limit your passive income strategy to the stock market. We can apply this exact same dividend philosophy to alternative, tangible assets.
Yes, alternative assets are key here.
Let's talk about fractional real estate, specifically looking at platforms like Osul Gamma.
This is a great transition. Introducing an alternative asset class is a textbook application of modern portfolio theory. It essentially argues for combining assets that don't react the same way to economic events.
Makes sense.
Real estate has historically been one of the greatest vehicles for passive income, but the traditional barriers to entry are incredibly high.
Right. I mean, to buy a rental property, you usually need a massive amount of capital for a down payment. You have to qualify for complex commercial mortgages, and then you have to deal with the operational nightmare of finding tenants and fixing leaky roofs.
It's a lot of work.
It is entirely prohibitive for someone just starting out. But fractional platforms like Osul Gamma completely flip that model on its head.
We need to understand the mechanics of how these platforms actually operate in the background. A platform like Osul Gamma pools capital from thousands of individual investors.
Okay.
Once they have enough capital, the platform purchases a tangible asset outright, say, a commercial logistics center or a residential apartment building. The platform's professional management team handles the tenants, the maintenance, and the operations.
And as an investor, you can buy a fractional ownership stake in that specific property for a remarkably low barrier to entry, sometimes starting at just 500 SAR.
Right. The platform collects the rent from the tenants, deducts operating expenses, and distributes the net rental income back to the fractional owners proportional to their investment.
So it's basically a dividend.
It is the exact same cash flow mechanism as a stock dividend. But it is backed by physical brick-and-mortar assets rather than corporate equities.
And because physical real estate doesn't fluctuate wildly minute by minute based on news headlines, it acts as a massive stabilizing force. You are building a deep root system for your wealth that taps into a completely different water source than your stock portfolio.
It's a fantastic strategy.
But, and this is a critical pivot, we have to manage expectations. The biggest question new investors always ask is, can I earn enough from these passive income strategies to just quit my job tomorrow?
This raises an important question about timelines and the reality of basic mathematics. Is it possible to replace a salary? Yes. Is it going to happen quickly? Absolutely not.
Yeah, unfortunately not.
Passive income requires either massive upfront capital or massive amounts of time. Let's run a simple calculation. If you achieve a very respectable 4% yield on a portfolio worth $100,000, your annual passive income is $4,000.
Right. And $4,000 a year is fantastic supplementary income, but it's not replacing anyone's full-time salary.
The math demands patience. This strategy is an endurance event. The true path is starting with what you have, religiously reinvesting those dividends to harness the compounding snowball effect and consistently adding fresh capital.
Just keeping that snowball rolling.
Exactly. Over 20 or 30 years, that portfolio can grow large enough to generate life-changing income.
but treating it like a get-rich-quick scheme will only lead to frustration and dangerous risk-taking.
It's about slowly buying back your time. So let's summarize the journey we've taken on this deep dive. We started by ditching the stress of day trading, looking instead to build a portfolio of silent partnerships with mature, cash-generating companies. We explored how the snowball effect of reinvesting those profits creates exponential growth.
And we decoded the essential metrics. We learned why chasing a massive dividend yield is often a trap, why the payout ratio and debt levels are the true indicators of safety, and we unpacked the actual market plumbing behind the ex-dividend date to understand why stock prices mathematically adjust when payouts occur.
Exactly. We navigated the very real risks, from dividend cuts and rising treasury bond rates to currency fluctuations and inflation. We established that deep diversification, extending even into fractional real estate platforms like Usul Gamma, is the ultimate shield against market volatility.
Yes.
And we grounded the entire strategy in the mathematical reality that building wealth takes serious time and discipline.
It is a methodical, highly logical approach. But before we conclude, there is a broader macroeconomic trend that we must consider as we look to the future.
Oh, I love a good forward-looking theory. What's the thought?
Well, the entire foundation of this strategy relies on identifying essential sectors, you know, the consumer staples and utilities that form the bedrock of daily life.
Right, the stuff we always need.
But as we accelerate into a future defined by decentralized renewable energy grids and artificial intelligence supply chains, we have to ask, how will the definition of a mature, stable sector evolve over the next decade?
Oh, wow.
Are the entrenched dividend giants of today guaranteed to remain the safe havens of tomorrow? Or will the next generation of stable cash flow emerge from entirely new industries?
Man, that is the million-dollar question. As the very fabric of the economy shifts, how will you adapt your strategy to ensure your investments keep generating that steady cash flow? Definitely something to mull over the next time you catch yourself tempted by a flashing market ticker. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. We'll catch you next time.